All of us are aware that there are all kinds of rescue efforts for Achenu B'nai Yisrael who are stuck in Ukraine. And as Rav Moshe Fima, who I spoke to this week, who's a Rav in Belarus and who's been very, very involved in the efforts along with many others, but he personally, I know, has been involved in saving a number of individuals who have tried to come out of Ukraine, bribing the officials, bribing the guards, getting them through the woods in ways that they won't be detected. It's just amazing what they've been doing. This is literally a situation of pikuach nefesh mamish, where people are really concerned that they are going to lose their lives. And we have many warm-hearted Jews here in the community who want to help and who want to assist, which is very special and very nice. And a question that many of the members of our shul who have reached out have asked me was, and it's such a beautiful shaila, it's painful that we have to talk about it, but the shaila is, how much should and how much must we give toward life-saving efforts in Ukraine? It's a very important shaila to ask. I don't know how many of you in the room currently actually thought about it. So we all want to give generously. But how much is generous? How much are we obligated to give? It's a distressing shaila, but a very beautiful shaila. And the answer is not a simple one at all. It's a very, very important question. So let's just back up a step. Let's try to understand the development of this question, what stands behind the answer, and then hopefully we'll come to some kind of resolution. So the Gemara says in Maseches Ksuvas Daf Nun, the Gemara here gives us a overarching principle that we're supposed to follow when it comes to many mitzvah opportunities that we have throughout the year. And the Gemara tells us that Be'usha Hiskinu, when the Chazal found themselves in Usha, which was a certain community after the Churban Beis HaMikdash, they made a certain rabbinic decree, and that was Hamevazveis Al Yevazveis Yoser Mechomesh. When you're going to spend money on any mitzvah that you have to perform, don't ever expect yourself to spend more than 20% of your assets to observe that mitzvah. So for example, we've heard the stories about a Jew in Russia who couldn't get himself a lulav and esrog. He couldn't procure a dalad minim. Couldn't get himself matzos for Pesach. And the Hasidic Rebbes back in all those stories would spend all the money in the world and they sold their olam haba away and all the great beautiful stories. They're all wonderful. But how much would they be obligated to spend to really try to get matzah? How much would they be obligated to spend to have a dalad minim come? So the Gemara says, up to 20% and no more. Now that means you have to be willing to spend up to 20% of your assets, which is also a tall order, but that's what the Gemara says. Definitely not more than 20%. That would never be the expectation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would have of anyone in observing a mitzvah. Why? Writes the Gemara, Shema Yitzdarech Lebrios. What's going to happen? Every time I have a mitzvah, I'm going to have to spend all my money. If I'm going to spend all my money, I'm not going to be able to do anything else. Then I'm going to be poor. Then I'm going to have to be collecting around town to support myself, day-to-day activities, and that would be an unreasonable expectation. And therefore, the Gemara says that one should never feel that they have to spend more, except for two mitzvahs. The Gemara says, when it comes to Dalet Kosos on Leil HaSeder, and when it comes to Ner Chanukah, in those two cases, we assume that a person would have to spend an exorbitant amount of money, even more than he would have to spend for any other mitzvah, which is surprising. Surprising on many levels. Number one, why should I have to spend so much on any mitzvah? And if you're going to choose two, it shouldn't be two mitzvahs midirabbanan. Neiros Chanukah is a very exciting, beautiful mitzvah, but it's only a mitzvah midirabbanan. Dalad Minim is daraisa. Shofar is daraisa. Matzah is daraisa. Maror is daraisa. So why would I go ahead and choose the two mitzvahs that are dirabbanan? Neiros Chanukah and Dalad Kosos on Leil HaSeder. The Gemara says because both of those are Mishum Pirsumei Nisa. The common denominator between those two mitzvahs are that they are meant to highlight the great miracle that took place both on Chanukah as well as on Pesach, and that is why you should spend an exorbitant amount of money. It still doesn't answer the question, or if Soloveitchik has a beautiful insight to explain it. We don't have enough time to go into it for another time, but it's just something to consider. Why would the Gemara have chosen those two and left aside everything else? Every day in Kriyat Shema, we say two paragraphs in the beginning of Kriyat Shema. First we say Ve'ahavta, which is followed by Ve'hayayim Shamoa. So you'll notice that there are some repetitive comments that are made both in Ve'ahavta and then once again in Ve'hayayim Shamoa. One of those is, in Ve'ahavta we say Ula'avda b'chalavavcha v'chal nafshecha v'chal miyodecha. We should love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should serve Him with all our heart, with all our efforts, with everything. U'v'chal miyodecha means with all your money. You should serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu with all your money. And yet, when it comes to V'hayam Shamoa, you'll notice that there we change the phrase. What does it say there? La'avas Hashem Elokechem la'avdo b'chol levavchem u'v'chol nafshechem. So what happened? What happened to our money? We lost it all by the time the first paragraph is over. So some suggest that perhaps the difference is there's one theme that is being discussed in Ve'ahavta, and a separate theme that is discussed in Vehayam Shama. Ve'ahavta is talking about our sense of Avas Hashem. How far do I need to go to express my Avas Hashem, my connection with the Ribono Shel Olam? For that, there's no gvul, there's no boundary. I have to do everything. The second parsha of Kriya Shema, Vehayam Shama, is talking about Kabbalas Ol Mitzvos. It's talking about my relationship with Mitzvos, which is an indirect relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's really discussing Mitzvos. Vehayam Shama Tishmu El Mitzvosai. It's talking about Mitzvos, and therefore, we leave out the word B'chal Me'odecha because you don't have an obligation to give all of your money to observe a mitzvah, as we just mentioned. You only have an obligation to spend up to a fifth of your assets. So we see that Chazal puts some kind of cap, some kind of limit to how much a person is expected to spend. Rav Dessler writes in the Michta Me'elio that although it may be true that there is a limit to how much I have to spend on Dalet Minim or on a shofar for Rosh Hashanah or on matzah or anything else, he says a person has to understand that if I'm unable to have the Dalet Minim that year because I didn't want to spend so much money, you shouldn't be celebrating that you saved the money. You should be in pain that unfortunately I don't have enough money to go and buy the Dalet Minim. God doesn't expect me to give all of my money, but that Sukkos is going to be a very painful one. And that that experience of Rosh Hashanah without a shofar is going to be terrible. I'm not celebrating the fact. He says, Kitino kabareach mi beis ha-sefer. He likens it to what Rashi says, that sometimes, you know, a kid gets out early from school and they're just so excited. Was school that horrible? No, it wasn't that horrible, but kids are kids, so kids are very excited when they get out early, when they have extra recess, when they have extra time to play with their friends. So he says you have to make sure that if you're going to be stuck in a situation where you're unable to observe a mitzvah because of the limitations, because of the restrictions that Chazal put on you, that you should not observe a mitzvah, understand that that should be a painful experience. I would say the same when we weren't davening with a minyan because we were told not to do so. So some people said, hey, this is great, no minyan. Now I'm free, I'm no longer shackled by davening with a minyan, I don't have to go to shul, and life is great. Other people said, this is a very unusual experience, it's very painful that I'm not able to daven with a minyan, that I'm unable to go to shul, that I have to daven in someone's backyard in the mud, that I have to daven in my bedroom, in my dining room with my kids running around. This is not a way to daven. The way to daven is to come to shul, to come to a Beis HaKnesses, and to do it right with a minyan, with a tzibur, berov hamadras melech. So what was your attitude when you had the strange experience, the unusual experience of having to change the way you always daven? And that is exactly what we're describing here. That's what Rav Dessler writes. I think the way to show what a person's attitude was is what happens after that strange circumstance is removed. Now that you no longer have a concern, have you still continued to go on with your convenient ways of davening in a way that you shouldn't daven, of davening in your own home, of davening in a backyard, and neglecting a Beis HaKnesses? That's the way to show whether or not I had hard feelings when that happened all along, or whether or not I'm actually excited about the fact that davening just became a lot more convenient. Be it as it may, the Chafetz Chaim makes a very important point, a very poignant point here in the Sefer Avas Chesed. And the Sefer Avas Chesed, he's talking, actually, Rabbi Axelrod here is learning once a month the Sefer Avas Chesed in memory of Tuvia Lefkovich, and it's been a very, very important limud. And in the Sefer Avas Chesed, he talks about many mitzvos ben adam lachaveiro, about the halachas of tzedakah and what our approach should be. And he says that here it's clear that Chazal told us that we shouldn't spend more than a chomesh nechasa, we shouldn't spend more than a fifth of our assets on any given mitzvah. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, that's only talking about a person who is not frivolous about his money otherwise. But if you're a person that's dumping $150,000 on a Pesach program because you want to have a great time, you can't turn around and say, well, I'm not going to give money to buy Lulav and Esrog. Again, I'm not going to give money. I'm not saying that we shouldn't go with our families and have a great time. But it cuts both ways, writes the Chafetz Chaim. You can't just say, Chazal said, oh, I can't spend money, so I can't spend money. Jews are dying in Ukraine. Look, Chazal say there's a cap to it. I can't help them. Yeah, but then next month you're going away and taking your whole family and spending all this money going to Aruba. And where'd you go for your winter break vacation? And what'd you do last week when you wanted a Shabbos off? Where'd you go? To Hawaii? So you can't turn around now and say, oh, well, Chazal limited me, so I'm stuck, so what can I do? Says the Chafetz Chaim, this is an opportunity to remind ourselves, what is the Hashkafas HaTorah about spending money? The Torah is telling us, this is how we expect people to spend money, in a responsible way, which goes throughout all of life. And the Chafetz Chaim says it means when we observe a mitzvah, we should spend our money responsibly. We shouldn't overspend. We shouldn't exaggerate. When it comes to vacations, when it comes to other things that we spend money on, we should do the same. It doesn't mean we're not entitled to take vacation. doesn't mean we shouldn't enjoy life. We should enjoy life. The Ribbono Shel Olam made beautiful places in the world for us to enjoy. But do it with moderation. Do it with a sense of responsibility, with a sense of understanding. Writes the Chafetz Chaim, we have to remind ourselves from this very halacha in Shulchan Aruch that we have the opportunity to really reflect on the way we spend money in general and whether or not we do it in a responsible way. So, to observe a mitzvah, as we said, you're expected to spend up to chomesh nechasav, up to a fifth of your assets. However, the Gemara tells us in Masechta Sanhedrin that when it comes to violating an avera, what if somebody comes to me and says, I would like you to violate this avera? The example that's given in the Gemara is, somebody asked me to serve Avodah Zarah or pay my way out of it. How much money would I need to give not to serve Avodah Zarah? How much of a bribe would I be mechuyev to give of my own money? Somebody's not sponsoring me. How much would I have to give in order to save myself the avera of serving Avodah Zarah? Says the Gemara, kol hon beso. You're mechuyev to give all the money in the world. When it comes to violating the avera of Avodah Zarah, that is limitless. And we assume you would have to be willing to give all of your money so as to save yourself from violating the iser of Avodah Zarah. The Rama, surprisingly, extends this halacha and says it applies not only to Avodah Zarah, but writes the Rama, it's very strange where the Rama has this, it's in Siman Tuf Resh Nun Vav in Or HaChaim, which is in the halachas that discuss Dalet Minim. So that's where it is, because he's discussing how much money you should spend on the Dalet Minim. Someone actually just told me an amazing story about my father. I was in California this past Shabbos speaking in Young Israel Century City. So they gave me a topic that I was most uncomfortable to speak about. They asked me to talk for an hour about what it was like growing up in my father's home. Strange topic. And I think maybe they were looking for gossipy, juicy stories. I don't know. I wasn't willing to take the bait, so I didn't. I tried to identify stories that would be relatable and would be ones that we can all learn from, even if we're not personally gedolim yet. But we have the opportunity to learn from the way others live life. Anyway, so somebody was listening to the discussion online, and he came over to me after, and not online, he was there in person. He came over to me afterward, and he said that my father went, about 3 or 4 years ago, my father went to buy Dalet Minim in Washington Heights. And it just so happened the most convenient place for him to go that year was B'nai Akiva had set up a stand for Dalet Minim. My father said, all right, it's just down the block, I may as well go. So he went. And this young man told me that B'nai Akiva got a bunch of high school volunteers from one of the local modern Orthodox high schools to go around the booth and to sell the Dalet Minim. And they taught them the halachas before. They said, if somebody comes, this is what you tell them. So they had no idea. My father showed up, and this young girl, who's in 10th grade, turns to my father, she's an SAR, and she's telling him, you know, I see you've come to buy the Dalet Minim, this is really the way it goes, this is what you should do, and you're supposed to spend X amount of money if you want this, if you want that. And she said, I would say that this is really the best one that we have here, this is what you should buy. And she said, my father sat there without saying a word, didn't give any comments on what she said, and he said that he was very impressed that she knew the halach as well. And then he said, okay, I'll take your word for it. If you tell me this is the best one, that's what I'm going to do. She said that he didn't look at anything else. She gave him the lulav, the esrog, and he walked out. He paid for it, and he walked out. And later, all the friends were making fun of her. You understand, you just lectured Rav Schechter, and he was just too nice to tell you that you don't know what you're talking about, and that this is actually not the nicest esrog at all. It's probably not at all what he was looking for, but he was just a mensch. He didn't want to make you feel bad, so he took what you offered him, and he paid for it, and he walked out. So it's a beautiful story. But that is why the Rama discusses in Hilchos Dalet Minim how much money we're supposed to spend. Because as all of us are familiar, we spend a lot of money on Dalet Minim. That's the way it goes. So there the Rama surprisingly extends this Gemara and he says, although it's true you only have to pay up to a chomesh, up to a fifth of your assets to observe a mitzvah, when it comes to any avera in the Torah, says the Rama, you have to be willing to give up kol hon beso. You have to be willing to forego all of your money, which is a shocking psak of the Rama. But that is clear. It's black and white. It's what the Rama says. So, for example, somebody comes to me and says, I'd like you to speak Lashon Hara. How much money am I mechuyev to give not to violate the aver of Lashon Hara? I'll tell the person, I'll bribe you. I'll give you $10,000, $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 that I won't have to talk Lashon Hara. I think at some point they'll break. I think at some point they'll let you get away with it. Says the Rama, you have to be willing to give kol hon beso, not to violate an avera. Someone comes and says, I'd like you to be mechal Shabbos. How much money do I have to give to try to convince the person out of their demand on me? The answer, says the Rama, is kol hon beso. Not only that, the Vilna Gaon adds to that, and he says, afilu shvus midrabanan. The Vilna Gaon quotes a proof from the Gemara, where he says, The Gemara Maseches Shabbos talks about somebody whose house is on fire on Shabbos. Now, this is an unreasonable case because nowadays, all of our homes are so close to each other, and if we're not going to put out a fire, the moment that it starts, it can be very, very dangerous. Even if everybody in your house is out of the fire, is out of danger, it could very quickly spread to a neighbor or to somebody else's property, and that could be extremely dangerous. So this Gemara is really not relevant to the kind of situation that we have today. But the Gemara says, in theory, if you have a house on a desert island, and you're in the ocean, and nothing's going to happen to you, and now the question is, it's not a desert island because there must be someone else there. So the Gemara says, but I don't want to lose my house because it's Shabbos, but I'm not allowed to put the fire out because it's Shabbos. We're talking about a case where there's no sakana at all. So in that case, says the Gemara, you're not allowed to ask a nachri. You wouldn't be allowed to ask a non-Jew to go put the fire out. And you wouldn't be allowed to put the fire out yourself. I'm not allowed to put the fire out myself. I'm not allowed to violate a malacha when the alternative is I'm going to lose my house and all my life savings that are under the mattress? Really? So the Gemara seems to say yes. And I'm not even allowed to ask a non-Jew to put out the fire. Even though my house is burning, it's up in flames, I'm going to lose everything, says the Vilna Gaon. Don't you see from there that even for a shvus midirabanan, even not to violate an isser derabanan of amira lenachri, also we would expect of a person to give up all of his money. Now that's a shocking expectation. But that's what the Rama seems to say, and that is the addendum, that is the extension of the Vilna Gaon. Now, we have an assumption that all the 613 mitzvahs were given to us equally by the same God. Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai and presented the entirety of Torah in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So why would there be a difference between a mitzvah saseh, that you only have to spend the fifth, and a lo saseh, that you have to give up all your money? If both of them were commandments that were given from the Ribono Shel Olam, why should there be a distinction? They should be the same. The rule should be uniform for both a mitzvah saseh and a lo saseh. And this is a question that has bothered many of the Gedolei Achronim, trying to figure out, what is the determining factor? Why would you say that a mitzvah lo saseh, you have to give up all your money, and for a mitzvah saseh, you only have to give up ad chomesh nechasev? It's hard to really categorize, to classify what the difference really is. So some suggest, the Prima Gadim writes, that the difference is as follows. The difference is, will I actively do something wrong, or am I passively doing something wrong? So say, for example, I have a mitzvah every year to observe what HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded me to do, which is the mitzvah of Dalet Minim. This year, it's going to cost me $50,000 to buy that. Okay, how much do you expect me to spend? So in such a case, I'm going to passively ignore the mitzvah. I'm not going to spend so much money in order that I shouldn't have to become poor, but I'm going to be passively ignoring a mitzvah opportunity that I had. In the other direction, somebody comes to me and says, I'd like you to eat non-kosher food. If I listen to them, I'm going to actively violate a lo saseh. I'm going to actively violate an avera. If I pay my way out of it, I'm going to save myself from actively doing something wrong. So the Prima Gadim and others write, the distinction here is not between a mitzvah saseh and a mitzvah lo saseh. It's not between a mitzvah and an avera, but rather between doing something actively against HaKadosh Baruch Hu or doing something passively, not having the opportunity to do Dalet Minim versus having to actively go ahead and eat the non-kosher food or to talk the Lashon Hara or to be Mechal HaShabbos, whatever it may be. All of those are in a different category simply because not that it's a lo saseh, but rather because I would actively be rebelling against HaKadosh Baruch Hu by doing that activity. A nafkamina would be, let's say, for example, if somebody asks you to violate the iser of Bayirah Bayimatzeh on Pesach. So what would you say there? Or, for example, the Achronim say, we have a mitzvah of when you eat a karban, you have to make sure that you don't leave it over until the next morning. If you leave it over, it's called nosar. So somebody says, don't you dare eat the rest of your karban. I want it to become nosar. So now, I'm not actively doing anything wrong. I just leave it in the kitchen, I leave it in the fridge, and I don't do anything. So would I have to give up all of my money as not to violate the iser of nosar? Somebody comes to me before Pesach and says, I don't want you to get rid of your chametz. So I leave chametz in all the cabinets. All my noodles are there, all my Cheerios, the Wheaties, everything is there. I'm not actively doing anything. I'm violating an avera by yirah by yimatzeh on Pesach and isur daraisa. Terrible. Chiyuv kares. But on the other hand, I'm not actively doing anything wrong. Would I have an obligation to give up all my money when the thing that I'm violating is only an isur that is being violated passively? That would be the nafkamina. That would be the test case. So the Chavos Yair, Rabbi Yair Bachrach, one of the great gedolim in the 1700s, has in his Tshuvas Chavos Yair, I just mentioned him yesterday in a shir, and I said, when he had his bris milah, his parents didn't call him Chavos Yair. They called him Yair. Later on, he wrote a sefer, and he became known by that sefer. My father was making fun recently how You know, there are some rabbanim who feel that they're on a first name basis with everybody. So they call everyone, yeah, Moshe Feinstein, yeah, this one, oh, my friend, this one, I was close with everyone. So my father says that there was a Yid in Europe who said he was so close with all the Gedolim, he was on a first name basis with the Chafetz Chaim, he called them Chafetz. So my father makes fun of the Rabbanim nowadays who do the same, who show no respect and reverence for those who are much greater than them, and he says, I'm on a first name basis with all the Gedolim, I call the Tzitz Eliezer Tzitz. So that's the joke that my father says. So here, the Chavos Yair has a very interesting shaila where he says, we have a mitzvah of Kvuras HaMeis. We have to make sure that we bury the dead as soon as possible. Not only that, we have an Isser of Lo Salin Nivlaso Alayit. You're not allowed to leave him in a state of dishonor, in a state where he's going to be with a lack of dignity. You have to bury the dead. So what happens if the government says, you're not allowed to? How much money, asked the Chavos Yair, do I need to pay off the government official to allow me to do the kvura? If it's only a mitzvah, so you'll say, all right, so you give up to a fifth of your assets and that's it. But now that we're talking about an avera, if I don't bury him, I'm going to violate an avera, so how much do I have to give? Seemingly, I would have said all of my money. Yeah, but violating that would be a passive violation. The body is there. The body's in the morgue. I'm not doing anything actively against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So maybe, I would say in a situation like that, you don't have an obligation to give Chomesh Nechasev. Not everyone agrees to this distinction. It's the Chiddush of the Prima Gadim and others. The Rivash, one of the Rishonim, disagrees. And many other prominent Acharonim don't really accept this distinction at all. And they say, no, there's a difference between a mitzvah saseh and a mitzvah lo saseh. The same way we find in the Gemara. The Gemara in the beginning of Yevamos writes, Aseh docha lo saseh. We do have differences between a mitzvah saseh and a lo saseh. And it's not really the distinction that the Prima Gadim is drawing. So here's an interesting question. We know that there's a mitzvah of tzedakah. How much charity should I give? So we just said you shouldn't give more. You shouldn't give more than an exorbitant amount. Okay. But you look in the Torah, in Parshas Re'eh, I believe, and the Torah there says, not only is there a mitzvah to give tzedakah, but there's also a lav. Lo sa'amet es levavcha, velo sikbot es yadcha. Don't close your heart and don't close your hand. Somebody comes to you and asks for charity. Don't be stingy. You have to give them. So that's a lav. So why don't you say, I have to give up all my money when somebody's collecting tzedakah, because if I don't give up my money, I'm going to violate a lo saseh of lo sa'amet es levavcha. How do you explain that? What's the answer? So I once asked this question to my father, and my father said the answer is as follows. The only time that the Ramah says you have an obligation to give up all of your money, all of your assets, is when we're talking about something that is an isolated incident, something that's chad pa'ami. Something that comes up, a one-off, anomalous situation, in a circumstance like that, the expectation is that you're going to rise to the occasion. Someone comes and says, I want you to eat non-kosher food. We assume that a God-fearing Jew is going to be willing to sacrifice all of his money not to violate the Avera once in his life. We assume that somebody who's being put to the test whether or not they're going to be Mechal Shabbos is willing to give all their money one time not to violate Shabbos. But what if you have somebody who's going to have an ongoing need that is in front of them? What if you have someone who's going to have a perpetual problem that they're faced with? The Torah itself says, Efes ki lo yeh becha evyon. Do you think there's ever going to be a time where somebody's not going to come collecting money? Unfortunately, that's the nature of the world. Some people are not able to live life without help, without other people assisting them. If that's the case, then what are you going to tell me? Every time I go out to work and I make money, every penny that I have, I'm going to have to give away. Not just today, but tomorrow again, and the next day. That's not a life. How can the Ribbono Shel Olam expect me to have a life where I'm going to perpetually be expected to do the same thing over and over again and never be able to live life itself? It can't be. And that was my father's chiddush. I think it's a fascinating chiddush that we have the right to assume that the only time that there's this expectation of giving kol hon beiso not to violate a lav is when we're talking about something that is chad pa'ami. Something that is a one-time, unusual circumstance. Something that is so out of the ordinary. But if someone is living a situation where this becomes the ordinary, and this becomes an everyday occurrence, then we would not have an expectation that they give all of their money. This all leads us to the question that we are unfortunately faced with now. And that is, we have a situation which I would believe is a one-time occurrence. We have a very dire situation in Ukraine, where there are Jews trying to get out. The money that needs to be spent to get them out is an exorbitant, overpriced to get them out. And how much money do I need to pay? So you'll say, well, there's a mitzvah of Pidyon Shvuyim. Has there ever been someone who's captured more than this? Pidyon Shvuyim, this is exactly what it is. So how much money should I give? I would say, if it's a mitzvah, you should give up to 20% of your assets. However, on the other hand, We have another Isser in the Torah, which is Lo Samar Adam Riecha. We know for certain that there are Jews who are stuck in Ukraine who cannot afford to get out. If I don't help them, Lo Samar Adam Riecha, you violate a Lo Sase Sheba Torah. Says the Ramah, how much money do I need to give not to violate a Lo Sase in the Torah? The answer is, don't be afraid. The answer is, all of my money. Kol hon beiso. So everybody here cleared out their bank accounts? So how do we deal with this? Am I supposed to give up all of my money? In fact, the Chasam Sofer asks a fascinating question. The Gemara says in Maseches Gittin, the Gemara there is talking about a number of takanas midirabanan that were made for the tovas atzibur. Certain things that without these kinds of institutions will never be able to have a functioning society. So the Gemara says there, the Mishnah actually writes, Ein podenas ashvuyin yoser mikidei demehem. If I have somebody who's taken captive and they're asking for millions of dollars to set this person free, the community, even though they can afford it, is not allowed to give that money. Why? We're very wealthy. We have the ability to do it. The answer is because our enemies know that the next day they're going to come, take someone else, and they're going to get money again, and they're going to clear us out. Which is why it's a very big discussion in Eretz Yisrael when they make these kinds of deals to get the chayalim back. It's a very serious halachic question. How do you deal with this Mishnah? The Mishnah says you're not allowed to. So the answer that they give is, if we're not going to do that, then a soldier, a chayal who goes out to war in the first place, is going to have such a low morale because he believes that the country gave up on him before he even started, he's not going to want to fight. So there are other considerations involved. But at a strict letter of the law, the Mishnah says very clearly that you're not allowed to give more money than the expected price that anyone else in the world would be expected to give for somebody who's in captivity. And if they're trying to rip us off, we're not allowed to give that money. So the Chasam Sofer asks, but why not? Don't we have a mitzvah to save someone from death? Lo samar adam riecha. The likelihood of someone who's in captivity being killed is very high. I mean, it depends who it is, but it's very high when we're dealing with terrorists. So why shouldn't I give everything in the world to save that person's life? How does the Mishnah say that we limit it? I mean, the answer some Achronim say is, yeah, technically you're right, but we have to make a takana derabanan, otherwise we can't have a society. It's not going to work. They're going to keep on taking advantage of us. It's going to be a vicious cycle, and we'll never get out of it. It's an interesting question that's relevant to this question as well. But again, our question to focus on it here is, how much money am I mechuyev to give to help somebody who's in a situation of definite pikuach nefesh, where they very well might lose their lives if they stay in Ukraine? How much money am I mechuyev to give? There's an aveira of lo samar adam riecha, so do all of us have to give all of our money? So some achronim would say, it depends not on an asay versus lo asay, as we mentioned, but rather active versus passive. So am I actively killing someone right now? No. They might have a very unfortunate circumstance there if they stay behind. But I'm not actively involved in doing anything wrong. So you'll say, that fits into the category of mitzvah saseh, as we mentioned before. And therefore, even though the Torah says, lo samar adam riecha, it's formulated in the lashon of a lo saseh, based on the way the Prima Gadim understood before, I would mention here that you would only have to spend up to chomesh nechasa. But again, then you would seemingly have to give up to a fifth of your assets, which I assume everybody here did not do either. So that is question number one. And on top of that, as we mentioned, not everybody agrees to that assumption or to that distinction. So this was a very, very interesting discussion that was had by many of the great achronim in the last generation. Rabbi Yashiv said as follows. Rabbi Yashiv said, how do we know that when someone's life is in danger, I have to save them? The Gemara says in Sanhedrin, how do I know if somebody's drowning in the river and I know how to swim, I'm a lifeguard, how do I know I have to jump in and save them? Not my problem. You were acting irresponsibly. You walked in a place where you shouldn't walk. There are signs all over the place. Why should I have to waste my time and go save you? Not in danger myself. I'm a lifeguard. I know how to save people. But I'm on my way to work. Why should I have to go save him? The answer is, the Torah says, we have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda. So if I have a mitzvah of hashavas aveda to give someone back their wallet that they lost, so you think I don't have a mitzvah to give someone back their body, their soul, their whole life? Of course, if I have a mitzvah to give someone back any item that they lose, certainly if they lose something that's most valuable to them, I have to make sure to give it back. And therefore, we learn the mitzvah of saving lives from there. Says Rabbi Yashiv, when it comes to the mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda, I don't have to give up all of my money. The Gemara says, when it comes to Hashavas Aveda, if I'm a lawyer and I get paid $1,000 an hour to do my job, and now somebody loses a ballpoint pen that falls out of the back of their bag, So I'm going to go running around town to go get the pen back, which is 25 cents. But he's going to have to pay me back $1,000 for missing an hour of work. So was that worth it? The Gemara says, of course not. Why? Because the trade-off isn't worth it. So he says, when it comes to HaShabbos Aveda, you have to look at the equation. You have to look at whether or not it actually makes sense. And over here also he says, I wouldn't be expected to do this for HaShabbos Aveda. I wouldn't be expected to do it here either when it comes to the mitzvah of giving back somebody's life. It's a tremendous chiddush, an interesting chiddush. Tzitz Eliezer has a lot to say about that. But the Maharsham, one of the great Gedolim in the early 1900s, late 1800s, has an interesting chiddush there as well. And he said, well, we know that when somebody becomes poor, there is a high likelihood, he says, that at some point they may die. If they don't have enough money to buy groceries, if they don't have enough money to buy all the necessities of life that they really need to live and sustain themselves, then at some point they can lose their lives themselves. So he says, if I'm going to give all of my money to someone else whose life is in danger, and thereby I can potentially endanger my own life, he says, how can you tell me that I'm mechuyev to give up my life in order to save his life? That's not fair. So it wouldn't make sense to give all of my money for the sake of pikuach nefesh. That wouldn't make sense. And on top of that, he says, the Gemara tells us that anius maver es ha'adam al das kono. When a person is poor, sometimes they're lacking in their amunah. By no fault of their own, they're having a very difficult life. The circumstances that have been thrown on them are impossible. And they have a hard time observing mitzvos under those kinds of dire conditions. And therefore, he says, the Gemara tells us, chalel alav Shabbos achas, kedesha yishmar Shabbos esharbe. Sometimes we'll let you violate one Shabbos if it's going to enable you to observe many Shabbos in the future. For example, if you have somebody, the Shulchan Aruch says, somebody who's captured on Shabbos, and he's captured by the Christians, and the Christians are going to not kill this person, so it's not a pikuach nefesh that the person's life is going to be taken, but it's a pikuach nefesh that their soul is going to be taken. The Christians are going to missionize him, and they're going to do everything to make the person no longer observe Yiddishkeit. In such a case, the Shulchan Aruch says, you'd be allowed to go out on Shabbos and save the person from those people who have taken them in. Why? Chalel alav Shabbos achas. It's worth it to violate one Shabbos now in order that we should give that person the opportunity to observe many, many subsequent Shabbos in the future. And here as well, writes the Maharsham, it would make sense for me to say that I'm going to keep money for myself in order that I should be able to observe many mitzvahs in the future instead of giving it all right now to save this person's life and then it's all over. Then my life is in danger. Then my life is problematic and I'm not going to be able to observe mitzvahs. There were other achronim who vehemently disagreed and said no. Most notably, the Chafetz Chaim writes that when it comes to pikuach nefesh, you have an obligation to spend all of your money. All your money in the world. And he says, we have a famous line in the Gemara, Chayecha, Kodmin L'Chayecha Vercha, that my life comes before the life of my friend. Says the Chafetz Chaim very famously, my life comes before my friend's life. But my money, Oshrecha, your money and your wealth is not Kodem L'Chayecha Vercha. Your money is not more important than his life. Your life is more valuable than his life. And therefore, you don't have to give your life for somebody else. But my money versus his life of course is more important than all my money. And therefore, the Chafetz Chaim says a person has to be willing to give every last penny he has to do the mitzvah pikuach nefashos. When I spoke to Rav Asher Weiss about it as well, he also felt you're mechuyev to give every last penny that you have to be able to do this mitzvah. However, it doesn't stop there. There's one very critical caveat that is discussed, and that is the following. And I hope this gives us some room to breathe or to sleep tonight. And the answer is as follows. There is a distinction that can be drawn between when I am the sole individual who can help this person and when all of us as a collective whole have an obligation communally to save those lives. Almost never, seldom do we have an experience where I am the only person in the world who can actually give all my money and I'm the only one who can save this person. It's usually not the case. Usually, like the situation we have now, all of us, Jews all over the world, share the responsibility. And therefore, in a situation like that, really it should be a proportional contribution. Depending on how much money you have, you should chip in on behalf of the Jewish community. But all of us have the shared obligation. So we should really split it up equally. And we should say, look, if these are the needs, X, Y, and Z, obviously it's not that clear cut. But if the needs are X, Y, and Z, you should give in proportion to where you are in the community of giving. That's the way it should work. And that is what Rav Asher Weiss told me on a number of occasions when I discussed other things with him. My father felt the same way, that the only time we have an obligation to give everything we have is if I'm the only person who has this situation and I'm the only one who can actually help. Now, it's interesting that Rav Shlomo Zalman in the Mincha Shlomo raises this as a possibility. And he completely and entirely rejects it. He says, I hear what you're saying. Maybe it should be true that it depends if it's a mitzvah that's incumbent upon the entire community, so let them all share the burden of responsibility. Why should it be on me? But writes Reb Shlomo Zalman, in the end of the day, Ein ze miskabel al daiti. He says, how can I agree with such a svara? It's not true. Mehechi tesi yiftar atzma milav chomer ze. I have a lav of lo samod al dam reyecha. I'm watching someone potentially lose their life. And I'm not going to jump all in. Why? Because I'm going to say, let somebody else help out. I'll help a little bit. Let somebody else fill in the rest. Writes Reb Shlomo Zalman, because acherim lo choshishim ve'ovrim al ze, because other people aren't doing what they should, therefore you have a right to overlook your responsibility. Your responsibility is to make sure that this person's life is saved. Have you fulfilled that responsibility? No, because you still have money in the bank. So can you be doing more? Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, yes. And he writes, I don't understand why people, litza'arenu, he writes, niskalim bazet tamid velo osim kach. Now, I can give you a very good reason why people don't do this, because it's very hard to do that. But Reb Shlomo Zalman says he finds it very difficult. Now, you'll probably ask, why did I ever discuss this with my father and Rav Asher Weiss? When does this ever come up? The answer is, I'll tell you an amazing story while we're over time, but I can't finish without telling this story that's so amazing. It was a number of years ago, I don't know if you remember, there was a Jew from Borough Park who ended up in Bolivia. He was arrested by the Bolivian government. I don't know if you remember the story. He had some kind of rice fields there. I didn't know anything about it. I don't know who this person is. I never met him. But one day I got a call from Tzvi Boyarsky. It was in the years when I was learning with my father in YU. We used to learn Mechavrusa every day. And I got a call from someone by the name of Tzvi Boyarsky. He's a Chabad shliach, who's the head of the Aleph Society, where they help people out who are stuck in jail. And he provides them with matzah and mara and all kinds of things. On top of that, whenever there's a situation of pidyon shvuyim, he tries to get involved. Real pidyon shvuyim. I'm not talking fake pidyon shvuyim. Real pidyon shvuyim. So he calls me up one day. He says, look, I looked into the case with Alan Dershowitz. I have all the paperwork. Alan Dershowitz believes, from his legal expertise, that this person really should not be held in captivity there. There's a very high likelihood he's going to die in the jail in Bolivia. He's been stuck there for a long time. The research shows that many, many of the inmates there kill each other. And we have every reason to believe that if he sticks it out long enough, he's going to die. So why is he calling me? What am I supposed to do? So he said, I know that your father is very highly regarded by a certain person who lives in the New York area, who respects your father tremendously. Anything your father will tell him to do, he will listen to. He won't ask questions. Happens to be, I asked my father, he said, I hardly know this person. But okay, this is what Tzvi Boyarsky said. He said, I did my homework. This person owns most of the real estate that the government buildings are in Bolivia. How he found that out, I have no idea. But he did his homework. And he said, the government owes him everything. The government has to play nice with him. So he said, I'd like you to ask your father to call him and ask him to intervene on behalf of this Jew who's stuck in Bolivia in the prison, who's probably going to lose his life. Okay, sounds easy enough. And he said, Alan Dershowitz is prepared to come to YU tomorrow to meet with your father and this person to discuss all the details of the case. He's going to show you that really this was an illegal arrest that they made on him. He doesn't deserve to be there, and we should do everything we can to take him out. Okay. I get this guy's phone number. I call him up. He tells me he's boarding a plane in Australia. He happened to be there for business, and he's going to come back tomorrow night. He said, I just have 5 minutes. I'm about to take off. What do you need? I told him why I was calling. He said, listen, most important thing to me is we shouldn't waste Rav Schechter's time. So even if we have to sit down to a meeting, I'm not going to make him sit with Alan Dershowitz. I'll sit with him. It's okay. He doesn't have to be there. But I want you to ask your father one question before we do anything. That question is, I'm telling you now, if I get involved here, the government in Bolivia is so corrupt, they will turn the story on me because they have to cover themselves, and they're going to take away all of my real estate there. I will lose 90% of the assets that I own. This person's a multimillionaire. But he said, I will lose 90% of the assets that I own. Am I mechuyev? Ask Rav Schechter. Am I mechuyev to give up 90% of the assets that I own in order to save someone's life who I don't know and I never met? That was his question. I asked my father. He was crying when I presented it to him. He made mention that it's very nice to paskin the shaila for someone else. Would you be prepared to do that for yourself? Put yourself in his shoes. But he's an extremely erlich person, this person who asked. And he said, no, I want the real answer. What is the answer? My father said, it gives me a lot of pain to tell you that the answer is yes. Since you are the only one, they've tried all the other avenues possible. And based on this understanding here, you are the only one who can actually be helpful to save this person's life. You're mechuyev to give kol hon beiso, even if it means giving up 90% of your assets. Person said, I have no problem. This is over the phone in Australia. I have no problem. If that is the psak, I accept it like every other psak you've ever given me in my life. I'm going to make the phone call. That's what happened. I was so uncomfortable with this, not because I didn't trust my father, but I was like, how do you say such a thing? And I actually left the room. I went to call Rav Asher Weiss, and I said, let me get a second opinion. You know, let me see. Maybe he'll be makel. I could call this guy and say, you know, maybe there's someone else to rely on here. I called him. I discussed it with him. He was amused by the question. And he said, I agree. It's hard to say, because it's not my money. But he said, if someone's actually asking the Shaila, the way that this is being presented, I agree that he would be mechuyev to give kol hon beiso. He would be mechuyev to give everything because he is the only one that can step in and actually save a life. That is what he said. I called this guy back. I said, I'm sorry to tell you. Just checked in with someone else who also passed in serious shilas, and he agreed that this is what you do. He went ahead. He made the phone calls. He negotiated. He had no problem stepping in, doing what had to be done. In the end, the person's life was saved. He didn't lose anything in the end. He was rewarded that his business took off kifle kiflayim. But I was so moved by the story. I was so moved by the erlichkeit, by the emunas chachamim that a person can have, that he says, the same way I've asked you shailas and hilchos kashrus and hilchos nida and everything else in my life, so I'm going to ask you this shaila and hilchos tzedakah and hilchos pikuach nefashos, and I'm going to listen to the answer because that's what we do as Jews. We have emunas chachamim. And at that time is when I really went through a lot of this sugya. I didn't re-prepare it today. That is when I went through a lot of this because I wanted to better understand what was behind that psak. How can it be that we came to such a conclusion? And I think that it sheds a lot of light on the situation here, but here also it works in the other direction. Since here the responsibility is not on any one individual, the responsibility is on all of us collectively, so we all share that burden and we all have the obligation to do whatever we can in a way that is proportionate to who we are in the community. Okay. I